Time for the Big Picture program, and we're joined on the line by Awid Algier. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. How are you, Mufti?
Alhamdulillah, I'm very well.
Wonderful to meet you in Durban a couple of weeks ago.
Alhamdulillah, it was a real honor, and it was nice meeting for the first time after chatting to you on the radio for so many years.
I thought you were some old bully bent over and so on, but you're a young man, Mufti.
You fulfilled my expectations.
You must have become a Maulana when you were about 8-9 years old.
It was really nice chatting to you, Awid Algier. It was a pleasure, and we hope that everything's going well your side. Where are we chatting to you from this morning?
Well, let me just tell you that it's 6 o'clock in the morning here in Marrakesh in Morocco. Amazing place. I am with a group of 40 people. Weather is a bit cold. In fact, we are going to be leaving in a few hours' time and traveling through the Atlas Mountains, where snow has just fallen, so everyone is excited about stopping there. We are on our way to the city of Fez, which is a place steeped in history and culture. Two nights there, and then we go to Tangiers in the north of Spain, of Morocco, and then take a ship, a ferry, for a two-hour crossing over to Spain. Thereafter, of course, it's going to be a fascinating journey, inshallah, through Andalusia, Islamic Spain, Granada, Cordoba, Sevilla, and then onwards to Madrid for shopping and chilling. So the story is that everyone is in good health, alhamdulillah, and having a great time. And they all said, I must convey salams to all of their friends and family back home.
Wow, it's really, really great listening to that. In for a time and a half, the group, how's the spirits been within the group? Is everyone well?
Well, I think this is the best group, actually.
That's a common trick. We know about that trick.
The best group. All jolly, all relaxed, and everybody's having a great time. Yesterday, where they went to the square in the center of Marrakesh. It is very famous. It's well documented on National Geographic and so on. World famous site there, where hundreds and thousands of people, they congregate to enjoy the food and the street entertainment. You get all kinds of them, people, snake charmers, cobras all over the place, a bit scary at times, but all having a great time, alhamdulillah.
That's great. Now, with the events that have occurred in the week, what's your response to the Brussels bombing?
You know, last night I was watching the German TV channel, English News, the TV channel called Deutsche Welle. It had a news item about a tweet. Well, this tweet is a British guy who stopped a Muslim woman in a London street, and he asked her, so what's your response to the Brussels bombing? And he tweeted that she responded with these words, it's got nothing to do with me. And he added the comment in his tweet, what a mealy-mouthed response, meaning what a brainless response.
Yes.
He thought that he was being clever, but remarkably, many came forward strongly condemning him, and some made a joke about his response. Anyway, there was some sort of poetic justice to this. It was found that his earlier messages insulted Muslims and Islam in the most vicious way, and he was arrested for hate speech. So I really like a happy ending. But all this got me thinking about the issue, the killing of innocent civilians and Muslims being fingered as the perpetrators, whether in Brussels or London or Boston or Paris or Nairobi or Lagos. No, I'm not going to speak about false flag operations or discrepancies in the evidence, like passports being conveniently found at the crime scene and so on. I'm not going to speak about that. I'm only going to focus on a particular response to a bombing, when a bombing happens, apparently carried out by Muslims. Whenever this happens, Islam and Muslims are put into the dark. invariably a very strong and angry call is made by Western leaders, politicians, and so on. Muslims must do more to stop terrorism. Whenever this happens, what do you hear?
Yes.
Muslims must do more to stop terrorism. Okay, so let's unpack that. Muslims must stop terrorism. Terrorism, of course, means the killing of innocent people. But let's set a general principle. The killing of all innocent people must stop. And by extension, any and all the people doing the killing must stop doing so. So, listeners, do you get it? But let's start... Sorry, I've got a bit of a flu. But let's start by looking at the demand that Muslims must stop Muslims from killing innocent people. Okay, so let's say I, A.B. Dowji, am prepared to take this request seriously. And I want to act upon it. Well, I will have a small problem. Dear people of the West, I have absolutely no contact with ISIS. Seriously, no link whatsoever. No phone number, no email address, no WhatsApp. Zero. I have absolutely no way of telling them to stop their nonsense. The bottom line is that they are not my army. I never set them up. I never contributed a cent to them, nor do I support them. And even if I had the crazy idea of going over there to talk some sense into them, there is a good chance that I will lose my head. And dear people of the West, here's another thing. Boko Haram is not my army. They never asked me my views about Western education, whether it's halal or haram. I didn't vote for them. And that other lot, Al-Shabaab, sorry, no link whatsoever. I really don't know who they are, in fact. So the bottom line is that they are not my army, and so I cannot stop them from killing innocent civilians. That, I hope, is very clear. So, let's turn to you. My request is that you in the West stop killing innocent civilians. And here's the best part. It's your army doing it. So you have a direct link. You pay taxes that support your army, and you vote and elect leaders who use your army to kill innocent civilians. You see where I'm going with this? I have no link with ISIS and cannot influence them, cannot stop them from killing innocent people. They are not my army, but your army is killing innocent people, and you have a direct say in stopping this. When an airstrike killed 42 civilians at a hospital in Kandahar, Afghanistan last year, I said, hey, Mr. American, you must stop. You must do more to stop terrorism. When planes drop bombs in Libya killing women and children, I say, hey, Mr. Frenchman, you need to do more to stop this terrorism. When heavy arms supplied to Saudis to kill innocent Yemenis, I say, hey, Britain or British people, you must do more to stop this terrorism. It's your army. ISIS is not mine. And while we are on the subject of condemning the killing of all, let me underline that, the killing of all innocent civilians, it would be lovely to hear more than just Je suis Charlie or Je suis Brussels. Let's hear Je suis Istanbul, Je suis Gaza, Je suis Kabul, Je suis Mosul. Dear people in Paris, London, and New York, you need to do more to stop terrorism.
Absolutely turning the tables on them. Now, another significant development in the week has been Radovan Karadzic. Karadzic is guilty of genocide. That has come through. It's been an ongoing trial and finally coming to culmination.
Yes. You know, one of the saddest moments I ever experienced in my life was when I slowly walked among these small white pillars, thousands of them, markers, gravestones with names of young and old men at the site of the systematic massacre carried out by Radovan Karadzic in Bosnia. The place, of course, was Srebrenica. 20 years ago, 1995, it was declared a safe haven. Serbs and Muslims were fighting. And this town was declared safe because UN troops were stationed there. Both sides in the fighting were to respect these places which were declared as safe havens, and thousands of Bosnian Muslims from surrounding towns ran there for protection by the UN troops. Then Radovan Karadzic and his thugs, his army, surrounded Srebrenica and went in. They put all the females and little children on buses and trucks and sent them elsewhere out of Srebrenica. The men were detained in huge warehouses. As I walked through this warehouse when I visited Bosnia last year, I could feel the terror, the fear these men and boys must have experienced. It was absolutely chilling. Every day, dozens of these men and young boys were taken out and machine gunned, some buried in mass graves. In fact, bodies are still being found today. More than 8,000 were killed, murdered. As I walked amongst the pillars, trying to stop the flow of my tears, I could hear the soft weeping of mothers and sisters kneeling at the grave of a loved one killed by Radovan Karadzic. I was grateful that I went to Bosnia, to Srebrenica, because it gave me a complete sense of that genocide. And so it had a special meaning for me when I saw this monster in the court in The Hague sentenced to 40 years in prison. Karadzic, of course, is 70 years old, so effectively he will die in jail. As I said, I like a happy ending. Here's something. Karadzic was not just a rough, tough, brainless thug. No, he was highly educated, a cultured person, an intelligent man. He was, in fact, a psychiatrist. How could such a sophisticated person kill so easily, with no moral conscience, nothing to hold him back? Read the book, Hitler's Willing Executioners, a bestseller of some years ago, which systematically shows that German society, Germans of all different social levels, sophisticated, cultured, well-educated, went about killing Jews without a second thought. They were continually told and believed that the Jew is a vermin, scum, and must be eliminated. So it was easy for them to do the job, rid society of this scourge, this disease. They would line up Jewish people at an open grave and gun them down, and then go home in the evening to sit with their families and have a lively, lovely meal. And I thought about the video that was released yesterday by the Israeli human rights organization known as B'Tselem, which shows a wounded Palestinian lying on the ground. He had attacked just before that some Israeli soldiers. I think it was a knife attack. But he was shot 2 times. He was still alive and he was lying there on the ground. Israeli soldiers were standing around chatting. Then one of them went over and shot the man in the head and killed him as he lay on the ground. Well, the Swedish foreign minister, if you remember, said that a few months ago that Israeli troops were killing Palestinian attackers who were wounded and posed no further threat. She was condemned by Netanyahu and was told that she was barred from visiting Israel. And I thought, what went through the mind of that Israeli soldier? Did he view this Palestinian lying on the ground as a cockroach, as a rat? What about the constant demonization of Palestinians, constant for years, decades, by right-wing rabbis? In fact, top people, for example, Rabbi Ovadia Yosef, the most respected of rabbis, hundreds of thousands of people pitched up at his funeral, highly respected, who compared Palestinians to cattle and even worse. So a mentality builds up in people that we have to get rid of this scourge. So you find that you have willing executioners ready to kill these people, rid the earth of unwanted pests. And I thought about all of this, and you have regular reports from dissident Israeli soldiers known as Breaking the Silence, who tell you constantly about how Israeli soldiers find it very easy to gun down Palestinians, almost as a sport. So all of this killing that took place in Bosnia, all of the killing that takes place in Palestine, is backed by many intelligent people, many sophisticated people, many on the level of Radovan Karadzic. When Gaza was being attacked and flattened, we were told stories like that they were hiding in these buildings. 20-story high buildings was a Hamas headquarter. How can that be? And they demolished and killed many, many civilians. So the point is that it's easy for highly intelligent people to defend something that really can't be defended. And I think I'll just leave it there.
Yes, it really defies logic. Light at the end of the tunnel.
Nothing much I got for you except that Tony met Ghulam Bhai at Checkers Day in Mir Bank. And Ghulam said, "Hey, whatever, Ronnie, why are you looking so sad, eh?" And Ronnie replied, "Hey, Gulu, what I must tell you, man, my fro Pushpa Min is so irritated, eh? I was sleeping on the sofa in the afternoon today in the lounge, and Pushpa kissed me on my cheek and she woke me up. She said, 'Ron, go to the shop and buy bread.' I said, 'Hey, darling, so nice you woke me up so gently with the kiss, eh? You never did that before.' Then she laughed and she said, 'I thought you would turn into a prince, but I'm so disappointed.'"
Have a safe travel, and we look forward to chatting to you next week, inshallah.
Jazakallah, Mufti.
Okay,
have a good
travel
day,
well.
Inshallah. Jumma Mubarak to everybody back home.
Jazakumullah khair. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Abi Dalji with the weekly Big Picture program, bringing us on to 28 minutes to 9.